Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. Today, we're jumping into a really big one, Margaret Mitchell's, well, her only published novel, Gone with the Wind. It's this massive book that's remained, you know, incredibly famous, hugely successful, but also pretty controversial. Yeah, it's this giant historical saga, really, and a tragic romance, too. It spans, what, about 12 years? Right across the American Civil War and then into Reconstruction.
That's right, 1861 to 1873, a really tumultuous time.
Uh-huh.
And you're right about the success. It was just staggering. Pulitzer Prize in 37.
And the movie, 1939, that just sealed its fate, didn't it? Made it a global phenomenon.
Absolutely. But, you know, beyond the history, what really pulls you in, I think, is this core conflict. It's about survival, fundamentally. Mitchell pits this romantic idea of the Old South, this sort of elegant, maybe idealized way of life.
Though deeply flawed, we should say.
Oh, definitely. Deeply flawed. She pits that ideal against the harsh, inescapable reality of just needing to stay alive when everything falls apart.
And that conflict really plays out through Scarlett O'Hara, the main character.
Exactly. The whole book basically asks you, the reader, a tough question. What are you willing to give up? Your morals, your reputation, your identity. What gets sacrificed just so you can endure? When your entire world is just, well, gone with the wind.
Okay, so let's talk about Mitchell herself for a second, because her background is super important here.
Crucial.
Yeah.
She was born in Atlanta, 1900, grew up literally surrounded by stories of the war and Reconstruction, often hearing them firsthand from Confederate veterans, including her own family.
So she had this incredibly personal connection to that specific version of Southern history.
Intimate, yeah. And that connection, it's kind of the engine of the book's power, but it's also where the controversy comes in. People praise the storytelling, the characters.
But it's also criticized quite heavily for romanticizing slavery and pushing that whole lost cause narrative.
Right. That lost cause idea. It basically frames the Confederacy's loss not as, you know, a necessary defeat of a system built on slavery, but as this sort of noble tragedy. A violation of a beautiful, cherished way of life.
And the novel makes that viewpoint feel emotionally compelling, doesn't it?
It does, because it focuses so intensely on the suffering and loss experienced by the white Southerners losing homes, security, everything. It doesn't really delve into the horrors of slavery itself.
So by focusing on that personal loss, it almost elevates their defeat into this universal tragedy, which kind of feeds into that lost cause myth.
That's a big part of the criticism, yeah. Whether Mitchell did it consciously or not, it had that effect for many readers.
But looking at it just as literature, her skill is undeniable, isn't it? Weaving Scarlett's very personal drama with these huge historical events.
Oh, absolutely. It feels both grand and incredibly intimate. And think about when it came out, the Great Depression. People were desperate for stories about pure grit, about survival against the odds.
That theme of resilience, it must have hit home.
Massively. Which brings us right back to Scarlett O'Hara. Talk about an anti-heroine.
Definitely. When we first meet her, she's 16, right? Vain, spoiled, totally focused on flirting and parties at 12 Oaks.
Completely manipulative.
Yeah.
Her world is tiny and superficial.
But the war, yeah. It just shatters that completely. It's like a forge, like you said earlier.
Yeah, that fragile Southern Belle image. It cracks. And what's underneath is this core of just sheer tough pragmatism. Her strength is that absolute refusal to give up, to be beaten down.
But it's linked to her biggest flaw, too, right? Her emotional blindness.
Totally. She's so focused on surviving, on getting money and security, that she spends basically the whole book chasing this fantasy idea of love. She mistakes this obsession she has with Ashley Wilkes for the real thing.
And completely misses the actual love that's right there.
Tragically so. And that shift in her from Belle to survivor, it really crystallizes in that one scene. Her lowest point.
Ah, the vow. After she gets back to Tara and finds it ruined.
Yes. Mother dead, father broken, land stripped bare. She's starving, digs up a radish, vomits. It's brutal. And then she makes that declaration, as God is my witness, I'll never be hungry again.
That line, it basically becomes her guiding principle, doesn't it? For better or worse. Mostly worse, morally speaking.
Pretty much. It overrides everything else.
And then there's Rhett Butler, the complete opposite in so many ways.
Oh, yeah. He's the outcast, the cynic, scandalous, wealthy, but incredibly perceptive. He sees right through all the romantic nonsense about the Old South from the very beginning.
He knows they're going to lose the war. He represents, what, adaptability, emotional honesty.
Exactly. But here's the interesting part, the contradiction maybe. If he sees through it all, why does he fall so hard for Scarlett? She embodies so much of that world he claims to despise, especially with her fixation on Ashley.
Good question. Maybe he sees the pragmatist under the surface, the survivor.
I think that's it. He sees her strength, that never-hungry-again core, when others just see the spoiled belle or the ruthless social climber. He loves that, Scarlet.
And that's why his story is so tragic, too. The ultimate cynic lets himself be vulnerable, truly loves someone.
And it's just not returned. Mm. Not in the way he needs. Because she's stuck on this ghost, this ideal. His disillusionment at the end feels earned, almost inevitable.
We also need to talk about the other key figures she's measured against. Melanie Hamilton Wiltz first.
Ah, Melanie. The moral compass of the novel, really. Her strength is completely different from Scarlett's. It's gentle, based on compassion, loyalty, kindness.
She's the foil, isn't she? The good angel on Scarlett's shoulder, maybe?
In a way, yeah. And her unwavering belief in Scarlett, even when Scarlett is behaving terribly, is probably the strongest example of forgiveness in the book.
Such a contrast to Scarlett's hard and brittle strength, as the book puts it.
Absolutely. And then there's the man Scarlett thinks she loves, Ashley Wilkes.
And the ghost, the symbol of that dying world.
Exactly. He's refined, honorable, poetic, all the things the Old South valued. But in the new world of Reconstruction, he's completely lost, weak, ineffective.
He represents everything Scarlett thinks she wants, the lost ideal, even while she's actually thriving in the harsh reality he can't handle.
Perfectly put. He's the fantasy she clings to.
Okay, so let's trace the story's path a bit. It kicks off with that big barbecue at 12 Oaks.
Right. Scarlett confesses her love to Ashley.
Yeah.
He gently rejects her, says he's marrying Melanie.
And Rhett overhears the whole embarrassing outburst.
Mm-hmm. Classic setup. Then, out of pure spite, Scarlett marries Melanie's brother, Charles Hamilton.
Who promptly dies of measles in training camp. Not exactly heroic.
No. Makes Scarlett a widow almost immediately. Then the war really hits. Atlanta becomes central.
And Scarlett ends up trapped there, right, during the siege, because she promised Ashley she'd look after Melanie, who's pregnant.
Yes. And that leads to that incredibly intense sequence where she has to deliver Melanie's baby, Beau, while the city is being shelled. Harrowing stuff.
Followed by that terrifying escape through burning Atlanta with Rhett.
An absolutely iconic scene. But even after saving them, Rhett makes this calculated decision to leave her on the road, abandon her essentially, to go join the fight. It's brutal.
Pushing her further, but the real breaking point is getting back to Tara.
Finding it devastated.
Yeah.
That's when she makes the vow, the never hungry again vow. That's the turning point.
And after that, Reconstruction hits and Scarlett just goes into overdrive, survival mode at any cost.
Any cost is right.
Yeah.
This is where her moral compromises really stack up. She needs money, desperately, to pay the huge taxes on Tara imposed by the new government.
So what does she do?
Well, first she finds out her sister Swellen is engaged to Frank Kennedy, who owns a store and a sawmill.
Uh-oh
is right. Scarlett basically lies, tells Frank that Swellen got tired of waiting and married someone else, and then marries Frank herself. Just steals him?
Well.
Ice cold. All for his money and business access. Then she takes over his sawmill, starts using cheap convict labor, which is notoriously brutal, and becomes this sharp, ruthless businesswoman. Successful, yes, but completely ostracized by polite Atlanta society.
And this period isn't just about business, right? There's real violence.
Oh, yeah. Mitchell shows the danger. Scarlett shoots and kills a Yankee deserter who attacks her at Tara. And then there's the incident where Scarlett is attacked driving alone, which leads Frank and Ashley to join a Ku Klux Klan retaliatory raid.
And Frank gets killed in that raid.
Exactly. Which, ironically, leaves Scarlett a wealthy widow.
Yeah.
And who steps in right then?
Rhett Butler, of course, proposes marriage.
Mm-hmm. And she accepts. This leads to this period of incredible wealth, huge mansions, fancy clothes. But the marriage itself is a battlefield.
Constant fighting, manipulation, trying to hurt each other.
Pure emotional warfare. Until their daughter is born, Bonnie Blue Butler.
Ah, Bonnie Blue. That seems like the one bright spot, the one time they're genuinely happy.
It really is. Rhett, the hardened cynic, absolutely adores her. She's everything to him. His vulnerability.
Which makes what happens next even more devastating.
The riding accident. Bonnie is killed trying to jump a fence on her pony, just like Rhett used to do.
And that just breaks Rhett, doesn't it? Completely shatters him.
Utterly. It's the end of any hope he had for their relationship, for happiness. He blames Scarlett, but mostly he just checks out emotionally. The light goes out of him.
And then, almost as a final blow, Melanie gets sick.
Yes. Melanie dies after suffering a miscarriage.
Yeah.
And her death acts this final painful catalyst for Scarlett.
Because Melanie was the one person who always defended Ashley, who propped up Scarlett's idealized image of him.
Exactly. With Melanie gone, Scarlett finally sees Ashley clearly, sees his weakness, his ineffectiveness, realizes he was never the man she imagined.
And in that same moment of clarity,
she realizes it was Rhett all along. Rhett was the one who understood her, challenged her, truly loved her.
And it's too late. Way too late.
Tragically too late. She rushes to tell him, but he's already packed his bags. He's leaving.
Which brings us back to those core themes. The cost of survival is huge for Scarlett.
Immense. She saved Tara, she got rich, but she ended up completely alone, having pushed away the one person who truly loved her for who she was. Mitchell really makes you question if that kind of ruthless pragmatism is worth the price.
And the theme of self-deception. Clinging to that fantasy of Ashley cost her everything that mattered in the end.
It's a powerful tragedy of missed connections, of bad timing, fueled by Scarlett's inability to understand her own heart until the very end.
Mitchell uses some great literary tools to make us feel this, too, like the perspective.
Yeah, the narration sticks really close to Scarlett's point of view, even though it's third person. So we, the readers, often understand things like Rhett's love for her long before she does. It creates this constant dramatic irony.
And the symbolism is strong, too. Tara, obviously.
Tara is everything. The anchor, the source of strength, the thing she fights for. And the red earth of Georgia itself symbolizes that deep, almost primal connection she has to the land.
And you can't forget the green velvet dress she makes from the curtains.
Yes. Perfect symbol of her ingenuity, her defiance. Using the symbols of the Old South's luxury to survive in the harsh new reality, making armor out of drapery.
So we get to that final scene, Rhett leaving, Scarlett begging him not to go.
And he delivers that line, the one from the movie that everyone knows, but it captures the book's ending perfectly.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Devastating. It's the sound of a heart finally closing for good. The limit of his endurance reached. He's just done.
But the book doesn't quite end there, does it? Scarlett doesn't just collapse.
No, that wouldn't be Scarlett. Even after that blow, her immediate reaction is pure survival instinct. She cries, yes, but then she thinks about Tara, about going home to regroup.
And delivers her own iconic last line.
Tomorrow's another day. It's the essence of her character, isn't it? Unstoppable resilience. But it's also maybe a flaw, her way of always putting off the hard emotional work, the real reckoning.
Just focusing on surviving the next day, scheming again.
Exactly. Survive now, feel later, or maybe never.
So when we look back at it all, what's the lasting impact? What does it force us to think about?
I think it forces us to see that incredible strength, that survival instinct can exist right alongside deep moral flaws and emotional blindness in the same person. Heroism and failure intertwined.
And maybe that true strength isn't just about enduring, but about having the wisdom to see and value the connections that make life meaningful.
Well said. You need both the fight and the heart. This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.